Hello once again, everyone. Thank you for joining me here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, coming to you from, once again, The Rock, where I live with my wife, Lisa, here in North Wales in the United Kingdom. We are transplanted Americans who have lived here now in Great Britain for nearly 12 years now. And I am bringing you another episode in my series of podcasts that I've been doing for a little more than a month now called Mind Shift. And I'm helping people to think critically about God, the church, and spirituality, which is the aim of the Preachers Forum podcast and my website, preachersforum.com. A few weeks ago, I went up to Liverpool and I met with my good friend Gary Hayes, and he and I recorded a couple of podcast episodes. And this one is now today, the second half of the conversation that I brought you last week on this topic of leaving the church to find God. Now, why would anyone ever contemplate this idea of leaving the church to find God? That's an absurd and ironic statement or question, isn't it? Surely. Because isn't the church the place where we come to find God, as it were, where we come to discover ourselves in a way? Well, I've been exploring this topic a lot. We recently joined the Facebook group Exvangelical, which has been a fantastic experience. My wife Lisa and I have met people from all over the world who have come out of the evangelical or fundamentalist movement and churches, and it is shocking how much bad theology, toxic teaching, bad exegesis, slanted theology, all kinds of crazy things that come out of fundamentalist and evangelical churches. And it has warped people's mental health. It's created all kinds of stress, anxiety, depression, all kinds of problems, both physical and mental. And if you listen to the podcast that I did a few weeks ago with Steve Austin on mental health, bad theology, and the church, a toxic mix, we get into some of this stuff, and I am just shocked, really, at the stories that come out of the ex-evangelical movement, and the people that come out of that are really messed up. And I guess I'd have to include myself in that list, because the more I read on the ex-evangelical Facebook group, and the more I post and share my story, more and more people are responding to it. And it's just truly unbelievable. It's saddening, and it's actually quite angering as well to realize the damage that so many churches and leaders and pastors and preachers have done to people. And I'm sure a lot of it is unwitting. They are well-meaning. They absolutely think they're doing the right thing. They think they're reading the Bible objectively and unbiased and all the rest of it. But the truth is, there's a lot of warped theology. There's a lot of fundamentalist doctrine that is still very much part of what we call the evangelical or conservative churches of today. And not just in North America. We've encountered it here in Great Britain as well. Some really unbelievable statements and things have been made by people in church leadership. And I've been exploring this a lot more in detail. I've been writing a couple of articles about this. I wrote an article last week called Leaving the Church to Find God that was kind of a companion piece to Gary's podcast that I did with him. And then I've written another one called Leaving the Church to Find Myself. And I put that in the show notes. There's a link to that article if you want to go take a look and read it. And I'm talking about my own personal story, the idea that you have to actually, ironically, leave the church, not just to find God and to find the freedom that is actually out there, almost transitioning from a black and white world into a world of color, but the idea of discovering your own identity, discovering your own humanity and who you are, which I think should be discovered in a church setting. But unfortunately, as we all are too aware, if you come out of this movement, churches all too often are places where you feel like you have to wear a mask, where you can't be yourself. It's not a safe place. And if you're a leader, especially a pastor of a church, you cannot afford to voice your doubts. You can't talk about your real life personal struggles, or you'll probably find yourself looking for another job. and it won't go down too well if you really voice the doubts and concerns and issues that you're dealing with. You have to be, you know, this shining example of what a Christian leader, a spiritual person is supposed to be, and you can't afford to make mistakes. You can't afford to voice your doubts and your fears, or even just question some of the status quo, some of the teachings perhaps in your church or your denomination, some of the pet doctrines or core values or whatever that church is built upon. And so this is the context, basically, of the conversation that Gary and I were having last week. As we ended it, we were talking about what does it mean to achieve salvation, in air quotes. What does it mean? And the idea that Gary was advancing was that being truly human, this is what Jesus himself, this is how he lived. And he says, if you want to understand what God is like, said Jesus, look at me. In other words, not in terms of the whole deity versus the humanity argument, but rather it's found in the way he treated people. He accepted, he loved people, he included people, he loved the unlovely. And this is the context of the discussion that I'm going to bring you in just a minute, the second half of this conversation, leaving the church to find God. Before I get to that, I just want to say really quickly that I will be talking about how you can get a hold of both Gary and myself at the end of the show on social media, and also how you can support the work of the Preachers Forum on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. What can you buy for $1? But $1 a month, which is less than the price of a cup of coffee at Starbucks, helps me, and it also allows you to gain access to our private Facebook group where we have great discussions and in a supportive environment, really. So I'll talk about that a bit more at the end of this show. And I'll just say one more thing before we get into the conversation with myself and Gary, and that is stay tuned for next Friday's episode of Mind Shift right here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I'm going to be bringing you a fantastic conversation that I had with Mark Allen Shelsky. He is the author of a book that's just come out on the 1st of September called The Wisdom of Your Heart, and it is a fantastic resource, and not to mention the fact that it ties in really well with these topics that we've been doing here recently on the subjects of mental health and bad toxic theology. You know, we hear so often in churches that you have to suppress your emotions in order to be considered spiritual. And we hear things like, you know, well, God really doesn't have emotions and neither should you. And our emotional makeup is often really overlooked and neglected, and we're really out of touch with our emotions. But our emotions, says Mark, have a huge part to play in our spiritual makeup as well. And so stay tuned for that conversation. Make sure don't miss that one next Friday with Mark Allen Shelsky on the subject of his new book, The Wisdom of Your Heart. So let's get right into it. I'm going to play a little bit from last week's conversation to bring you back into it. So this is Gary Hayes and I, recorded live in his kitchen in Liverpool a few weeks ago, talking about leaving the church to find God.
I think Jesus was born into a world, into a religious system. Not only was it a religious system, but it was a political system as well. But this religious system that was the antithesis, the opposite of what God had created. And he comes, and Jesus says, no, this is what God looks like. He doesn't look like that big temple with this hierarchy and all of this laws and regulations to try and make God like us and show favor to us. He looks like this.
Yeah, so look at me. Look at the way I treat people.
Yeah.
Look at the way I live. And you'll see God.
Yeah.
That's God. And you can do that. We can all do that.
We can do all
those things you just listed. We can be inclusive. We can be loving. We can, you know, love the unlovely, touch the untouchables, whoever those are in your life. And that's emulating the model that Jesus himself lived.
I think therein, because Jesus says, you know, about following him.
Yes.
Okay, so the wife's following the way that he exemplified whilst he was on earth, the way that he showed his disciples, that the church soon lost, not all of it, obviously, you know, the church has done amazing things. You know, the church has been a tremendous force for good, but it's also been an awful force for bad, you know, for evil. Okay, but Jesus says, follow me. And I believe that in following him, therein we find salvation.
Yeah, we're on that path, on that way. Well, I love what Karl Barth says about Jesus. He says, look, you can, you know, it's funny because he wrote 14 volumes of church dogmatics, which are almost impossible to read. But I did pick up something amazing from church dogmatics. And Barth said, look at Jesus. He only really did three things. One is he served God. Two is he served others. And three, he lived in community.
Yeah.
So if you want to know what being a Christian means, then you go away and you figure out, what does it mean for me to serve God? It's not going to be the same thing as it is for you, and that's fine. And what does it mean to serve others? There are a lot of people I can serve in my life, and I can live in community. And that's basically what Jesus himself did, says Bart anyway. And I thought, you know, that's brilliant. It's just abstract enough where I can go away and figure out those three things for me in my life.
It's got to be, you know, it can't be about, you know, hoops and rules and regulations and laws and thinking the right thing. And, you know, it can't, salvation, the way, cannot be about those things. That's ridiculous. So being a Christian, and there's the word I want, you know, Christian, little Christ. So if we call ourselves Christian, we are little Christs. Well, what was Christ like? Because if I call myself a Christian, then I should be being like Christ.
Sounds pretty simple, but why is it so difficult then?
Because we got it in our head rather than in our heart.
Yeah, because I wonder, to go back to a statement you made a little bit ago, you said, talking about agreeing to those bullet points or fundamentals, what it does is it makes you part of that particular club or whatever you name you want to church.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes you like them. So that certainly accomplishes that aim, but does it accomplish the aim that you're talking about, to be on the way, to be like Christ, to live as he lived, and to treat others the way Jesus himself did?
Well, we love our clubs, don't we? We love our tribes. You know, I belong to a club, you belong to clubs, you know, little subcultures that we have going on in our worlds. And it's nice, and you know, but we get to clubs, the problem is they set up rivalries, don't they? You know, yes. I belong to this club, you belong to that club, you're hairy, we're smooth, you're a rocker, I'm a mod.
That is
true. Why don't we just kill each other?
They used to fight at Brighton Beach back in the 60s or 70s, didn't they? The mods and the rockers.
You know, and I'm a Jew. You're a Christian. I'm a Muslim. You know, he's a Muslim. Why don't we just kill each other?
Yeah, whatever label you can put on people, and people do.
Now, I'm English. I watch with amazement what goes on in America at the moment. We see it on the news. You know, we follow what goes on in America, and a lot of us our jaws are on the floor.
We think,
how can this be in a civilized, educated, 21st century, you know,
enlightened. Would you even use the word enlightened?
Well, I would use it, but I don't think it. I don't think the word
used to work. Maybe.
No. You know, where we are supposedly civilized, and America is this nation that projects itself as the superpower.
Yes.
Well, what does that mean, superpower? Does it mean that we've got bigger bombs?
Yeah, or that's what it originally meant, didn't it? We can kick everybody else's ass because we got a bigger military and we've got more nukes than you do.
We don't understand how a clown can be the president.
Yeah, it's true. And how that 81% of the white evangelical Christian base voted for him and continues to support him.
Well, I know why they do that. I believe I know part of the answer to why they do that.
All right, what's the answer then?
Well, if you're what was the phrase you used? A white conservative evangelical?
Yeah, that 81%.
Okay, that's quite narrow, isn't it?
All of
white,
those, yeah, descriptors.
Evangelical. Now, white conservative evangelicals, they don't like outsiders.
That's true.
They don't like homosexuals. maybe they don't like black people as much as they like white people. I'm not going to say they're out and out racist, but I'm sure some of them are, because there were murders in America because over this very issue.
Oh, yes.
Okay, and your president didn't condemn, okay, and his members of his, what would you call it, Senate?
His cabinet, his advisors.
Yeah, they're also remaining very suspiciously quiet on this. Yeah,
that's true.
Is there a conspiracy going on here? We don't know. But we don't like, we like the status quo. We like business as usual. Now, if you're a follower of Jesus, you don't get business as usual.
That's true. You have to rock the boat sometimes.
Because Jesus, if you look at Jesus, he comes into a world, like I said, religious and political, and he speaks truth to power, and yes, he upsets the apple cart, and he got killed for it. He was killed by humans who didn't like what he was saying.
And he was a threat to their, well, certainly to their financial security. You know, why they got so upset with him for destroying their little business at the temple.
Yeah.
Because they were making a packet of money off of that little scam they had going.
Mm.
And it was a lucrative system.
And also, if you've got a theology that says, I'm going to pick homosexuality because I was recently on one of those pride marches that caused, for me, a big backlash. But I'll talk about that another time. But if you're a white conservative evangelical and you don't like homosexuality and the politics, okay, because that's a religious theological thing. We don't like homosexuality because of some verses in the Bible.
Or the way they're interpreted,
the way that they're interpreted by some in the Bible.
It's a sin and it's a choice and they're going to hell.
And the whole word's like abomination, you know, get bandied around, you know. But when you've got a politics that supports that particular piece of doctrine.
Yeah, that's a worldview, really.
You're going to support that politics and call it the politics of God, because really what you're doing is you're not actually defending. And use the word defending or apologizing, apologetics for God. You're not supporting God's mission. You're supporting your belief in the Bible. The Bible, more often than not, when it comes to these kinds of issues, the Bible takes precedence over God. It did in the days of Jesus with what we now call the Old Testament. Obviously, there wasn't a new one at that time. But Jesus came, and I believe that in him lived the fullness, outworked the fullness of God in human form. That was Jesus Christ. That's why he could say, if you want to know what God's like, look at me. But he said and acted in ways contrary to the scriptures.
Yes, he definitely upset the apple cart on many occasions.
Yeah. I'm going to use this word trumped, but I don't mean it in that way. But he trumped.
Oh, I know what you mean.
The scriptures are not God.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You have to define that, because there's a lot of what we call biblicism and bibliolatry in the evangelical church, for sure, where we worship the text. It's a holy book. It's an authoritative book. What do we mean by that? And it actually, it gets elevated to a level that perhaps it was never intended to be in the first place.
No, I don't think that the biblical writers even knew that they were writing scripture.
Yeah, that's a question, isn't it?
For me personally, as someone who teaches Bib 101, I've been through seminary myself, I'll go on record now that the Apostle Paul did not sit down to write a section of the New Testament.
Yeah, I'm going to write the Bible today, a chapter from the Bible.
And I don't think that the Gospel writers were ever writing texts that they believed were going to go on to form the foundation of a religion called Christianity.
Yeah,
they weren't doing that.
They were just living out what they were. They were their own experiences, weren't they?
They were writing to an audience.
Yeah, I mean, Paul wrote letters to churches that he planted in most cases, yeah, or individuals that were leaders of those churches, yeah, like Timothy and Titus.
That's right. The text
to give advice and things.
That's right.
And to correct problems that he saw within these churches and so forth.
Yeah.
And they've become, that's most of what the New Testament is, isn't it? Is Paul's letters.
Certainly, was it what was I reading? 13 of the 27.
Yeah, a majority of the New Testament. And this is the thing is, going back to this topic of leaving the church to find God, somehow what I hear you saying, it's all wrapped up in that. We haven't actually talked about that shift. But to me, I'm hearing that what we're seeing so much in the church is, you know, particularly narrow biblical interpretations, theological traditions that have come to us down through the centuries that we may or may not have questioned or thought to question or dared to question. And this has become a system. It's become a club. And yes, I can gain membership to that club by agreeing with your particular theological bullet points, but in the process, perhaps, you know, lose God in that sense. Not lose your salvation. That's not what I mean.
I know.
Is to get off the path. And sadly, you have to walk away from that whole system, that mentality, to actually find God. And a lot of people are doing that now. They're leaving the church because they just can't do it anymore.
No, I mean, you know, we listen to other podcasts, don't we? You know, I listen to I love listening to the Holy Heretics, the Inglorious Pastards, and I love listening to Rob Bell and Pete Rollins, and you know, and you know, we're getting very, and obviously Richard Rohr again, you know, but we're getting the same theme. You know, you listen to these podcasts, and I love them, and you're hearing very similar stories, similar theologies coming through. You know, and the whole thing around deconstructing our religion, deconstructing doctrines and popular beliefs. Now, when I was in a particular club called Eltham Green Fellowship in Southeast London,
yes,
I felt very safe and very secure because I belonged. Yeah. Not only did I belong, but I was actually at the top.
Ooh,
of the hierarchy there, okay? Yeah. I didn't just go to the church. I mean, I played a major role. I drew my identity. I drew my self-worth. I drew my comfort. I drew my reason for being from that small, and 250 people, small.
Yeah, not a huge mega church.
No, but it was enough to make me feel important and to make me feel significant and to make me feel that I was doing what God wanted me to do. But stepping back now, and with the, you know, benefit of hindsight and with the sort of distance, in not only geographically but in terms of time, I can see that actually I equated church service, serving the church, I equated that with serving God.
Yeah, it's one and the same thing then.
But I wasn't serving God at all. I was serving what went on inside four brick walls and the culture that had been developed within that small gathering. It had its own identity. It had its own language. You know, we had our own songs and everybody... you know, certain words had certain significance. That's the way it is in clubs.
Yeah, you have your own jargon. Every club, every, you know, job has its own jargon.
If I started talking to you about zoot suits and being a face, and I could, you know, I could use mod jargon. Yeah. You don't know what I'm talking about, okay? And you could, you know, vice versa. So within this small church that had its own culture, I felt very safe and secure, and that was the same in my understanding. That was the same as being right where God wanted me to be, doing just what God wanted me to do. Was I effective in terms of what I now call the kingdom? No, not at all. I was very effective at telling people what they wanted to hear.
Yes, you're propping up their beliefs and reaffirming, because I think a lot of people go to church every Sunday if they do go to church, expecting to be affirmed in what they already believe and already think.
And then I got a buzz off of them coming to tell me how fantastic I was.
Yeah.
And so our codependency was set up. They fed off of me, I fed off of them, and we all just carried along on our own, on our jolly little way.
It was a love fest. Well, it didn't end well.
Well, no, once you question the core doctrines, then you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. And the weird thing for me is when I look back on my time as a pastor, I was an elder and a pastor, and I talk about this in my whole Rock and Roll Soul series of podcasts, but I don't even know who that guy was. Seriously, when I look back on that guy...
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, who the hell was that guy?
And do you
wish, I don't even know who that was.
Do you wish, because I've done it, I've wished that I could get in some kind of time machine, go back
DeLorean.
In time, and I want to stand up on that platform and categorically apologise for all the crap that came out of my mouth. Because I know that I have damaged people through what I've said.
I know I was damaged from what others
and
said
I've been
to me.
Damaged as well,
We've all been burnt. In fact, it's a funny thing. I came across...
and this is the church.
Yeah.
We haven't defined it.
We still haven't defined it. But I came across a folder that I found on a backup hard drive the other day. And it was a folder of sermons that I preached back then.
Right.
And I thought, oh, do I even want to open this folder? Because I used to write them all out, basically manuscript my sermons, and then practice them. And then on Sunday, I would preach them without any notes because I'd practiced them so many times. And so they're all manuscripted. There's dozens of sermons in there from when I was a pastor. And I cringed when I finally started looking at those sermons.
I can imagine.
Some of the stuff I said, I can remember one sermon, and my conclusion was something about, you need to put yourself in a place where God can bless you. That was my conclusion to this, whatever passage I was preaching
from.
What
place would that be?
I don't even know. And I thought to myself, what was I saying? You need to put yourself in a place where God can... So that means, I guess, align yourself with the right principles.
Believe the right things.
Believe the right things. Do the right things. And then God will begin to bless you. That was my actual sermon.
Well, I'll tell
main
you what,
point.
This church that I was co-pastoring down in London had, you know, it came out of a, it was a real crazy mix of Baptist, Brethren, Charismatic, Pentecostal. It was a real mix.
Very eclectic crazy, thing.
Yeah. And yet it was so narrow and tight and biblical literalist, you know, to the nth degree. And I remember once I stood up on the platform ready to launch into my sermon. You know, you go through that 5-minute preliminary warm-up. And I noticed that one of the ladies was sat in the congregation and she didn't have her head covered.
Uh-oh.
And I said, I really like your hairdo, Kate, but it should be covered up, shouldn't it?
Shame from the pulpit.
And I look back now and inside I die. When I think that I could have that I could do that to another human being.
And you're so right. You're so correct to do so, weren't you, at the time?
Oh, my gosh. Because we had this literal thing going on about women must have their heads covered. Everything that was written in Scripture is literally, you know, true according to our interpretation of it. Forget the exegesis. I mean, you know, a lot of what I would, you know, I don't want to keep having a down on evangelicalism because that's the, you know, that's where I was birthed and brought up and, you know, I can only criticize it because I know it so well.
Well, that's both of our context. We come out of fundamentalism,
but you know,
and conservatism.
Exactly. And what I'm going to say is so much, they completely bypass any attempt at authentic exegesis of Scripture, but they jump straight to supporting their pre-existing, what we might call a hermeneutic.
Yes, interpreting the Bible.
Yeah. So in other words, I know what I want to say, and I'm going to find some scriptures now to back up what I want to say. That's not exegesis. That is not sound. That's eisegesis. It's doing it the wrong way around.
Yeah, and we have to wonder what is, again, the purpose of the church. What's the purpose of going and hearing a sermon if it's nothing more than to affirm what we already think we believe is the truth? Then we're on good, solid ground then, aren't we? But now, this is the whole thing, isn't it? Leaving the church to find God. I mean, what would you say to that person who might be listening to this podcast, who's sitting in a church and he or she is deconstructing their beliefs and questioning some of the things they're hearing? It's actually quite scary to even contemplate walking away from that. Because like you say, it's a community.
Yeah.
You have unbelievably profound relationships. And that's what kept us in the church for so long. We couldn't take the some of the preaching and some of the things that were going on from the front, but the profound relationships that we had made it very difficult to, and that's what we stayed as long as we did, you know, and that's that. I feel that's a loss that people turned their backs on us when we walked away from it. We just said we couldn't do this anymore, and they said, well, we can't be your friends anymore because you don't go to our church anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a sad... And so there's a contemplation of losing some very significant relationships.
It's very sad. And we had exactly the same experience. I mean, my wife, Cheryl, who will be doing a podcast at some point around... You know, she is mentally ill. She has been mentally damaged because of this church that we were in. And one of our biggest regrets, the biggest losses that we feel most keenly is that sense of community. Because you can be inside a toxic community.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can have a fantastic time inside a toxic community.
Yeah, very dysfunctional community. Yeah.
But you're functioning inside that exactly. dysfunctionality.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's giving you the parameters. It's giving you, and you know what the rules are. You know where the boundaries are. You feel safe and secure. And as long as you're wearing the right clothes, talking the right language, and saying amen at the right points in the sermon, then you're in.
And if you got your head covered in some...
It's even better.
Even better.
Unless you're a man.
Oh, yeah. You don't need it then.
Well, I once remember that our pastor standing up to speak, and he just stood there in silence. And after about 30 seconds or so, he said, I'm just waiting for so-and-so to take his hat off.
Ah. Yeah. The men couldn't wear hats.
No, but the women had to.
Yes. I remember the great American comedian George Carlin does a whole piece on this. He says, I don't understand different religions. You know, some... men have to wear hats.
Yeah, that's right.
And then others, they can't wear hats. Some places women can't wear head coverings. Some places they have to. He says, I don't understand. How does this relate to God? He can't hear you if you've got a hat on? Or if you're a woman and you don't have your head covered?
Okay.
It's unbelievable. The toxic theology is just amazing.
Very quickly, the theology, the biblical interpretation that was going on in our churches, our group of churches that meant that women had to have their heads covered, is in 1 Corinthians, where Paul's talking about head covering at the end of that long passage about authority and, you know, head covering.
Headship and all
at
this.
At the very end, he says, because of the angels. Dia tus angelus in the Greek, for if that impresses anybody.
It might.
just to show that I really am an authentic Bible scholar there.
You are a scholar.
Yeah, dia tus angelus. Because of the angels. And our sort of head... honcho pastor man said that when Paul said that, he was referring to fallen angels, and that if you were in worship, a worshiping community, and there was worship going on, and you as a woman did not have your head covered, you didn't have an authority on your head,
then you
were wide open to being possessed by a fallen angel gaining access to you through your head because you didn't have authority on your head. Can you believe that?
There are no words.
Is that not the soundest exegesis you've ever heard?
It is. Eisegesis. Well, there's a not funny story that a friend of mine, when I went to seminary with, he was a member of a church. I won't name the denomination, but they also believed in head covering. And he was a youth pastor. And they had an overnighter at this person's house with all the kids from their youth group at this overnighter. And at one point they broke away for this sort of prayer session in one of the kids' bedrooms. And all the women were scrambling because they couldn't find anything to cover their heads with. So they couldn't pray. And they dug around in this kid's closet and they found a plastic red fireman's helmet. Yeah.
Fireman Sam.
Yeah. And each girl, as she prayed, they passed the fireman's helmet to her and she put it on her head. She prayed and then passed it to the next girl, and then it was okay. And they couldn't proceed until they found something to cover their heads with, and it was a red fireman's plastic helmet. And their theology was intact then. God obviously heard the prayer because of the head covering, you know. So when we get into this thing of leaving church to find God, there is so much toxic theology, and it can damage people emotionally, spiritually. You know, and it is difficult to contemplate walking away from that,
Think about, I'm going to use a lady, it could equally apply to men, but think about a woman who is in an abusive relationship. We, on the outside, look and say, why doesn't she just leave him?
Yeah, why can't you just walk away?
Walk away. Well, she can't. Because there are whole psychological, emotional attachments going on that we know, we don't even understand how they work.
Financial as well.
But the very same thing is happening inside these kinds of, you know, I'm going to use the word toxic. I don't mean that, you know, to mean, you know, that they aren't wonderful people. Of course they are.
Yeah.
Nobody is deliberately doing what they believe is wrong. You'd be have to be a lunatic, yeah? Everybody is doing what they believe is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the truth, isn't it?
It's true, especially when you start putting a veneer of religion on top of it.
Yeah, people who blow other people up, people who stab people in the name of God, people who drive their cars into other people in the name of Allah, they are doing what they believe is right.
Absolutely. Otherwise, why would they do it?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so being inside one of these conservative, evangelical, biblical, literal congregations, it's hard to leave, because when you leave, you lose so much.
Yeah, all these people, so much at stake.
All of these people who've been your lifelong buddies stop being your buddies.
And absolutely they do.
So where was the friendship in the first place?
Exactly. What sort of friendship was it really? Was it real true community then?
No, it wasn't. Because the guy, my co-pastor, we grew up together. We were, you know, in our teens together. And we went on to lead this church together. The moment I started to change theologically, because I went to Spurgeon's College in London, which is a fantastic Bible college, loved it. I started to learn to read the Bible in an authentic context. I learned how to do exegesis. And I came back from Bible school and I would change the tone of my preaching.
Uh-oh.
And that's when these friends,
in air quotes,
stopped being friends.
Yeah, exactly. So were they friends? Could their faith handle being challenged, deconstructed? Well, I'm thinking we're kind of running low on time. If someone's listening to this podcast, we'd love to hear your story.
Oh, please give us some feedback.
We'd love your feedback if you're struggling with these things.
And we can answer these things in future podcasts.
Yeah, we could talk about more on this subject. How can people get a hold of you, Gary? What's the best way? Twitter?
You can tweet me on @TheoClastic. You can find me on www.theoclastic.com, and there's also a Theoclastic Facebook page where you can become my friend and we can communicate that way. I'd love to hear from you all. Listen, it was hard. No, I'm not going to say it's easy to walk away.
You're not going
to
sugarcoat it.
No, it's hard work because, like I said, it's like a bereavement.
Yeah,
Something dies.
I mean,
you know, people who've been abused by their fathers grieve when their fathers die.
Yeah. I did when my father died.
Okay, so the same kind of things are at play, but once you do it, once you make the break, and once you get over the fallout and the emotional turmoil of it, boy, you find God in such a deeper, richer, purer, warm, loving way, because you now access God not through performance, but directly, heart to heart, rather than head.
Yeah, all rational. I was thinking of the movie. I can't remember the name of the movie. You know, where it's a world of black and white.
Yeah,
and then the color begins to be introduced into it, and it's such a threat to
Happyville or something like
Happyville,
that?
USA, or something like that. Yeah. You know, and it's this whole thing, isn't it? Of there's such fear in abandoning what is known and loved, really.
And that film Chocolat has got the similar theme.
Same kind of theme, yeah. The idea of, you know, walking away from the safe, the known, the security, really, of the friendships, but yet there's a huge world of color out there that is waiting to be experienced if you just start taking those steps.
Well, let's just think, so just quickly to end, think about Jesus's first followers, you know, Peter, James, John, Peter, these guys.
Yeah, the disciples.
They would have been rejected because they followed Jesus, who didn't toe the party line. He wasn't kosher. Although he was, obviously, because he was a good Jew. Yeah.
But he kept breaking the Sabbath. He kept breaking this nasty habit. Okay.
And, you know, so just think, how would their community, how would Peter, James, John, Matthew, how would their communities have responded to them once they knew that they were followers of Jesus? Why would Paul have been stoned and shipwrecked and all of these things happening to him if he was doing what was right?
Yeah, he certainly wasn't when he was persecuting the church.
Was he being persecuted by his fellow countrymen when he was persecuting the church?
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he was applauded, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For stamping out this heresy and everything else.
But once he became a follower of Jesus, once he got on the way, that's when...
Yeah, the trouble all started. Yeah. And they followed him from town to town. His own fellow Jews, you know, stirring up trouble everywhere he went. And he ended up in prison many times and was whipped and all kinds of horrible things instigated by his own fellow Jews following Judaism. Because he was a traitor, he was a heretic, he was everything else, wasn't he?
I think that once I was able to, throw off, what would you call these, you know, just wrong thinking, wrong mindsets.
Toxic theology.
Yeah, about... It was like they were keeping me from God. In other words, like the title of this podcast, I had to leave the church, but by that I mean this particular group of people who met in a particular building in a particular place. Yes,
that
I
community.
I had to leave that.
Yeah, that was a dysfunctional, toxic community. Yeah.
And then I found God, and now for me the church is so much bigger.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a huge community worldwide. It's amazing what's happening, isn't it, on social media, just on that platform alone.
Yeah.
We're talking to people all over the world from different walks of faith and life, and that's an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So join the conversation. This has been Clint Haycock with my good friend Gary Hayes.
Yay.
Once again, on this topic of leaving the church to find God, we definitely want to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter as well. At Preachers Forum. You can follow Gary on Twitter also, as he says, at Theoclastic. You can email me, preachersforum@gmail.com, or you can like my Facebook page, facebook.com/The Preachers Forum. You can also support The Preachers Forum on Patreon for as little as $1 a month.
Whoa, $1?
$1 a month.
What can you buy for $1?
You can go to the Dollar Tree, which is like our pound land in this country. So for the trip to the Dollar Tree to buy some worthless piece of junk that's not going to last, you can actually help continue on what Gary and I are doing. Pays for things like podcast hosting and travel expenses, things like driving up here to Liverpool and all kinds of other things. So be a part of the community. You'll be a part of our private Facebook group where we have an amazing conversation about all kinds of stuff. And we're looking to welcome more people into that conversation all the time. So thank you once again for joining me on this episode of Mind Shift here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I'm Clint Haycock, and this is Gary Hayes.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening, and I really look forward to speaking to you all again soon.
All right. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.